Well, happy Thursday. Welcome to another edition of Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. So glad to have you at the other end of the radio waves, the telephone line, the Twitter machine, the email account, and all the other ways we have to communicate nowadays. And before we begin, a reminder, you are always welcome to be part of the conversation, however and wherever that may wander, via phone and email 850. We may get a new area code here before long, too, guys. We'll keep you posted on that one. But for now, it's 850-414-1234. Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email. And we welcome back to these microphones a guy who we've had on for how many years now, Jack Levine?
You've been coming on. How many decades, Tom?
Anyway, Jack Levine, advocate, founder of the Four Generations Institute. You were with Voices for Florida's Children for a while as the president of that organization, and you crank out some interesting missives via email and other communication platforms all the time. I just got one from you, Jack. You were talking, and this is a very timely topic, about the impending, perhaps, arrival of Hurricane Dorian in our area. Go over some of the helpful hints you had on that, because that was fascinating.
Well, you know, we all have to remember that if we have a belief in faith and prayer, it doesn't hurt to say a few, on not only on behalf of ourselves, but on behalf of those who are more fragile, our elders, our children, our pets. And yet there's the practical. You know, we really do have to be prepared. If we lose power, even for 48 hours, I mean, there are needs that need to be addressed. And, you know, all the emergency management stuff under the governor and all of the communications that we have, you know, over the years, we really have to, I feel, take it personally. And, you know, I'm a prevention kind of guy, and prevention by my lexicon is keeping bad things from happening. Well, we can't stop the weather, but we can be prepared in some ways to fend off the real crises that could happen. So, you know, I sent out a top 10 list. I'll give everybody later my email address. I'd be glad to share it. But the bottom line is, you know, I do have a flock of folks out there, mostly Floridians. So this one was Florida only. And I did, frankly, in 12 hours, get quite a surge of thank yous of folks who, you know, will use the tips they said, but more important, appreciate the sentimental outreach and the brotherhood. So, yeah, thank you.
Well, it's good to know that there are other like-minded folks that are out there, and that as we come off of the terrible situation that impacted not just Tallahassee, because we had a lesser degree impact than the folks to the west of us with Michael last year, I think we have a higher sensitivity to these kinds of things, and certainly when it comes to preparation. And we'll remind everyone that you got two sandbag locations opening up here about 50 minutes from right now. They're going to be out at the Messer Park on Jackson Bluff Road. The city has a sandbag location opening there. Also, the old Northwood Mall, that will be opening at noon today. So bring your shovel, load them up. It looks like right now we may have more of a rain event in this area than a wind event, but you got to be, as Jack indicated, all ready to go no matter what may come our way. Most of us look forward to retirement, and it's a time for travel or just kicking back, maybe improving your own situation, getting some of those courses that they offer through Ollie and other resources in the community, and self-improvement or reinvention of self. Man, it's going to be great. But about one-third of all U.S. adults or grandparents perhaps looking forward to those golden years, and the average age now of becoming a first-time grandparent, Jack, as you provided us with this info, is 47. The average age of grandparents around 64, and the average grandparent having six grandchildren, about 77% of grandparents are married, and about half are still working, but so many of these grandparents now are having to go back into parental mode. What is going on?
Well, demography, some call it demography as destiny, has changed so remarkably in the last 40 years. that we have to recognize that many aspects of what we would call the Ozzie and Harriet traditional family that may never have been as unrealistic as television portrayed is now starting to become a demographic surge. There are many factors that have made grandparents the sole caregivers of their grandchildren. Military deployment, people forget about that. We've got males and females in our armed services who are either hurt, wounded, or the ultimate deceased, who need care for their children because they're going over with children left behind. We've got a surge of drug addictions of various kinds. Being addicted to drugs is both an emotional and economic reality, and we can't ignore that. We've got incarceration. We've got domestic violence. There are lots of things, teen parenting. So if the confluence of all of these negatives result in somebody's got to do the job, we do have a foster care system, but you know what? They're beleaguered too. And they're beleaguered sometimes without resources. You know, it costs more to kennel a dog than we pay our foster parents to take care of our children. And it's not just the torn T-shirts they're supposed to replace. It's weaving the torn life. So, you know, we have to honor those who are willing to do this. But bottom line, we've got to empower grandparents and other relatives. We call it kinship care, to give them the tools that they need to be responsible, because these children cannot make it on their own. So Florida is really, because of our demography, a kind of a point central for this. And I've got some good news to share too, but that's the demographic reality of why so many. We've had almost a tripling in the last four decades of sole responsibility of grandparents for the raising of their children, grandchildren.
And as you said, the resources that are necessary, because some of the grandparents, let's face it, we think that the warranty is going to just keep on cranking on, but we start to fail in our own physical and sometimes psychological ways and don't really become the ideal caregivers for the grandkids. And who backstops us? It's not going to be the Department of Children and Families, as you indicated. They can't even keep up with the foster system we have.
Right. So the good news, because I'm a good news kind of guy, I've been accused of taking optimism pills every morning, and they're the time release kind. So, Tom, one just kicked in. Believe it or not, the Congress, the U.S. Congress, known for their battles royale, has recently, as most recently as 2018, with the signature of the president, created a very, very important act on the responsibility of grandparents and the resources that they need. Now, it's not, brings trucks full of money, but it is a recognition that our planning about social welfare, child welfare, needs to include the reality of grandparenting and, to some degree, grandparent rights. And what we're looking at is a shifting, not away from parent rights, but sometimes the parent is not the person who is going to be awarded the child. I mean, again, we're talking about unwilling or unable. So the National Act is really a clarion call for creative approaches at the state and community levels to give kinship care the merit it's due. And a Florida good news story, we've got the best kinship care support program in the nation, in the Bay Area of Florida, that's now spreading to many other counties. It's called the Children's Home Network Kinship Care. I'm working with them to help the advocacy side of their work, because we've got these grandparents who have stories to tell. And the stories are what move people. The statistics don't. So we're working very, very closely. They're now going to be contracting in about 15 other counties around the state. And again, we could put that on your website. It's the Kinship Care Network. The other thing about this in terms of causality, I think, is very important to realize is we are a state of strangers. Two-thirds of the adults in Florida are not Floridians. another nation, another state. You know, I came here 40 years ago, but I'm 68 years old. So for 28 years, I was not a Floridian. My relationships around the state, I am meeting newcomers all the time who, frankly, don't even know the name of their county. They just know the name of their development. They can't name one of their elected officials. Again, they come from somewhere else, from another environment. So we've got to integrate our newcomers because sometimes they come and then the call comes that their grandchild needs them. You know, real life is about real life. It's about emergency phone calls. So I'm finding a plethora of diverse people, some with means and some on the edge of poverty, who are now desperate for some advice and some support. And here again, you know, I don't know if advocacy is in my genes. We could talk a little bit about my background with my 60-year-old dad who was 60 when I was born. But the bottom line for me is we've got to respect and regard the need for supporting these grandparents, and that will reward the children and reward our state.
You mentioned stories. We certainly would love to hear stories from the folks who are listening to us right now, Jack, at 850-414-1234. Are you a grandparent caring for a grandchild as the primary caregiver? Would love to hear how that has impacted your life and your experiences along that line. You can zap us an email, too. That's perspectives@wfsu.org. And we'll be back in just a moment and talk to our friend Reed and take your calls and emails too as this edition of Perspectives with Jack Levine of the Four Generations Institute rolls on. We'll be right back. On Perspectives, which you can find online at WFSU.org. You can check out this program or any of our archive shows going back many, many moons. Big tree. Just go to that website, click on radio, hit local programs, click Perspectives, and we try to have the most current show up within 24 hours of when it appears on the radio. Joining us by phone is our friend Reed. Hello, Reed. Good to hear from you, sir. How you doing?
I am doing extraordinarily well. You know, regarding your original conversation about the upcoming storm, I am sitting here right now, and you won't believe this, out here in the middle of nowhere, watching guys put a new roof on my house. I've been waiting since October for this, you know? I'm in a good mood, dude. And you know, I wrote the book on cynicism, as you well know. And so, you know, one of the main reasons I was calling today was to thank you for putting the Big Ben's greatest optimist on the show again. Because Jack Levine is truly a treasure to this area, and I don't know where we would be without him. My question is, a whole lot of people seem to be collecting money under the name Children's Home or Children's House or Children's Fund. How do we know when we see this who we're giving to? Exactly what do we need to do to support what Jack is pushing?
Well, Reed, let me jump in on that, and thank you for earning the bribe I gave you for the compliment. Reed, you know, the Department of Agriculture has another duty. It was called Consumer Services. And they basically own the database. And any charity, no matter what they call themselves, needs to not only register, but put their IRS forms online. And we have a very, very assiduous process for checking out the good ones from the charlatans. So that's step number one. Step number two is every organization needs to, by request, give you their financial statements in their audits. I mean, it is basically the law. And if they hesitate at all, then that should start to smell a little sour for you. So yes, they use the word children, they use the word veterans, they use the word law enforcement. There are lots out there, and there are lots of wonderful agencies that are not only accountable and their boards are accountable. However, we do need to be wary. If you have an unsolicited call, I would say thank you very much and hang up. If you have an unsolicited letter, I would very, very much scrutinize if they don't put the phrase that they are registered with the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services with their number of registration. There is a number for each one. Smell a very, very bad relationship. So we've got to be vigilant. And you're right, you know, tugging on the heartstrings is one thing, but tugging on the purse strings is another, and we've got to be responsible.
Yeah, it sounds like the old don't delay, give today. Well, no, we can wait until tomorrow. Let's check it out first and make sure that our money is going to a legitimately good cause, because you're right, Jack, there's a lot of charlatans out there. God, good luck with your roof, Reed. We'll see. Once they put the new roof down now, it has a guarantee, right?
Hey, my son is the manager of the company.
All right.
It better have a guarantee.
Keep it in the family, Reed. We're moving forward. You better go out there and watch them. Make sure they swing the hammer
way. I don't need to watch these guys. I know nothing about this. They do. I don't need to watch them. I'll just get in the way.
Reed, always great to hear from you. Good luck, and let's hang in here and hope everything comes out okay. All righty. Well, you had mentioned that, again, we have some national resources now in the form of the legislation from last year, Jack, that is giving more rights to grandparents, and that you mentioned Florida is doing pretty well in this regard when it comes to making resources and other help available, not just for grandparents who are acting as parents, but really children's issues in general. Give us an overview of that.
Thank you, Tom. You know, we have to realize that, you know, social problems, family problems, we could call it, have been on our minds, you know, for time immemorial. But in the last 30, 40 years, there has been leadership in both parties, frankly, that has recognized that it's not whether we pay, it's when. And the idea that we miss the opportunity for prevention is not only bad for children and families, it is terrible for the budget. The cost of not doing the right thing is much more expensive. So we have a pretty wide berth, I'll mention a few by category, that have created an environment in Florida which gives people the confidence that money put in the right place does the right thing. And I'll start with Healthy Start. Healthy Start is about pregnancy services, especially for at-risk pregnancies. It was founded by who I used to call the grandfather governor, Lawton Childs, and his administration. It's now almost 30 years old. More than 5 million babies born since it's been founded. We've had a decrease by a third of infant mortality, the best progress in the nation at a time when we've had really a 250,000 babies born every year. And Healthy Start has some challenges is because with the opioid crisis and other crises, more risk is happening during pregnancy. So we need to support our Healthy Start coalitions. There are 32 of them in Florida. The one here in this listening area, there are a couple, but one is a capital area, which is Leon and McCullough. One is Gadsden County. And these are good folks doing wonderful things, and we need to support them. Another example is Healthy Families. People say, what's with all these healthies? Well, Healthy Families is the tried and true child abuse prevention program under the Ounce of Prevention Fund. Only 2% of the families who receive services, and these are voluntary services, only 2% get reported to the child protection system as abuse neglect. So that's a 98% success rate. And year after year, people question that and they reassess. And guess what? It's year after year. And this is the core of this. It is peer interaction. Many of the people who knock on the doors, again, voluntary, and do this home visiting, come from the same background in demography as the doors they're knocking on. Now, why is that important? Because peer relationships are essential. They're good for grandparents taking care of grandchildren, and they're good for at-risk moms and dads. So healthy families deserve support. They haven't been cut for several years, but now is the time, I believe, for an enhancement, and we can talk more about that. Another example that I think is so valuable is the improvements to our early childhood system. Now, people can criticize that, you know, when we ran the statewide amendment to the Constitution for universal pre-K, there was the word quality in that amendment. Quality is still up for grabs. But there have been improvements. There's been better access. But more importantly, we've realized that now you cannot succeed in kindergarten unless you're ready for school. So the whole relationship between the infants and the toddlers and the preschoolers is being examined by business community, by our early learning coalitions, by a whole plethora of pretty hard graders, the Florida Chamber Foundation. So we are, again, elevating this, and I cannot ignore the Guardian Ad Litem program. You know, now 30 years old with 12,000 volunteers, representing children one child at a time, I hate the word case, one child at a time in front of the judges to make sure the judges have the adequate information they need to make good decisions. And the numbers of adoptions are up. The numbers of reinstatements to families getting services are up. And again, when you've got this army of advocate volunteers and, you know, you get to meet a couple and all of a sudden you say, wow, what a great... And let me tell you a little secret, whisper, whisper. The legislators are afraid of guardian ad litem volunteers. And you know why? Because there's no leash or muzzle. They say appropriately what they want because they're not being paid. So, of course, there's staff supervision. There are lawyers involved. But it's the best in the country, our guardian ad litem program. So folks can visit guardianadlitem.org and get a very, very special view of that. And there's a funding source that Florida has invented now 73 years ago called Children's Service Councils. The original was in Pinellas County called Juvenile Welfare Board. They've updated the name to Children's Service Council. Actually, some now call it the Children's Trust. The most recent that was voter-initiated out of Gainesville, Alachua County, first county to do a new one in 12 years, have tremendous support by over 50-year-old voters. So people think that elders won't vote for children are wrong. The data shows that in our referenda for school improvements, for children's service councils, that elders properly approached will vote for children. And Leon County is very much in the game right now, looking at a 2020 ballot initiative. So here again, we've got to reach out to our friends at Westminster Oaks. We've got to reach out to our folks who have associations that are primarily, I'm a Kiwanian, most Kiwanians are of an age, so we have to make sure that we do this the right way to get the yes. And some people say, oh, it's an expansion of government. Wait a minute. It's totally accountable. It's investment or prevention oriented. And in the counties that have done that, and there are 9 counties now that have done that, their child abuse numbers are down, their success numbers are up, their delinquency are down, so we have provable data to show. So I say let's play with our strengths, move forward, and Florida can even be better for kids thanks to the good voices of us over 50-year-olds.
The planning committee for the proposed Children's Council here in Leon County is going to have another meeting here coming up in September, Jack. Mm-hmm. We've been following those. The whole process, though, is focused right now on what shall be the priorities of that Children's Council, because you can say, oh, we're in it for children's issues, and that covers such a wide gamut. As you just elucidated here, it's a matter of focusing in and saying, okay, what are we going to do? What will this, will the tax revenue be used for as far as providing children's services? That's still a work in progress here.
Yes, and every community has its own method of doing this, really customized to the community they serve. So there is data involved. There is a planning process. you know, Alachua, I was following them week to week to week over a 3-year period. And gosh, did they do it right. And frankly, if I've got a voice about this, I love the term children's trust. That's what Miami did 12 years ago. They had a resounding yes. That's what Alachua decided to do. So I'm asking my friends who are on this committee, and I'm connected, but I'm not, you know, technically a member of this committee. I'm hoping they would consider the word trust, because trust is a very trustworthy word.
And it's perception is reality. It really is. One thing we didn't do, though, in Florida, Jack, and we can certainly debate the merits and the downsides till the cows come home, but the expansion of Medicaid services. And you have Florida KidCare that has been trying to fill that gap when it comes to medical services for kids, and they always kind of lag behind the curve. What about those guys?
Well, the reality for medical access, again, is totally a product of a parental ability to pay, you know, and not providing dentistry to children whose teeth are either going to grow good or grow bad, not providing access to special needs care. Again, we've got some programs, but the volume of growth of Florida demands keeping up with that growth. So again, the cliche I use, but it works, is it's not whether we pay, it's when. And how dare us not invest in preventative early intervention and even treatment care? None of us as parents or grandparents would ever choose to have our child suffer. That is anti-human. So how dare we not put the dollars in? And again, there's always an argument that says, oh, well, we're getting stuck in a trap. My gosh, Medicare and Medicaid are cost effective. And what Medicaid provides is a leverage for some bountiful federal dollars that are going somewhere else. It's not that these dollars won't be spent. They'll only be spent in proportion to the states that agree to put some on the table. So I say let's continue the fight. There's a great movement now towards reforming some of our dental access practices. And stay tuned. I mean, there's lots to be discussed. And I'm hoping, again, this new administration with the very, very great leadership of our First Lady, Casey DeSantis, who is now the chair of the Children's Cabinet, bringing together all of the agencies, look holistically at the children's needs from prenatal all the way through prison prevention. I think this is a great opportunity, and I'm heartened by the appointments that Governor DeSantis is making to some key critical roles in his administration.
You have expansion of things such as access to mental health care now that is coming into the schools, not just because of school shootings and that, but the seemingly the realization, a light bulb just went off, that this is also something that we will pay for either now or later, and it's always much more expensive later than sooner.
You know, science is science. I mean, there are some who almost use the word science as something that's negative. Science means that you have discovered something that is real. And what's true is children need real services to not only survive, but to succeed. And if a third of our children are not ready for kindergarten, and then a third of our teenagers are not prepared to meet the future that is very, very challenging, we've got to realize it's the same third 10 or 12 years later. So how dare we not invest in the quality that we know is scientifically proven to help our kids succeed? And again, you know, I'm bragging about my age group, but we grandparents know that. And we grandparents have a say because we vote at 70%. 30-year-olds vote at 17%. So we have the power. And by the way, for those who are interested in the philanthropic data, over 50-year-olds give 70 to 75% of philanthropy. So both in politics and in philanthropy, you've got to work with your over 50 crowd or else you're missing your target population. So now being a grandfather myself, I kind of feel elevated to give credence to that statistic.
Which is also hearkening back to what Mr. Mahoney had mentioned before about the fact that we are targeted so often for all these scams that come along because they know we're generous and we're going to give money at the drop of a hat, usually.
We've got to be careful.
When it comes to parental modeling, that seems to be an issue that so many psychologists and child advocates have brought up again and again and again, whereas in previous generations, there seemed to be more of the folks who were kind of the template parents. Here is what a grown-up looks like. Here's what adult responsibilities and activities look like. And children could see that in their lives, maybe to a larger degree than today, when a lot of kids kind of stay kids for longer periods of time, even when they have children. Let's talk about that, Jack, on the other side of this break coming up on Perspectives. If you want to talk about children's issues, particularly if you are a grandparent or you know a grandparent who is the primary caregiver of a child, give us a call, 850-414-1234, or send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org, and we'll be right back. Jack Levine, advocate, founder of Four Generations Institute, here on Perspectives, talking about not just grandparents as parents, but kids, for the kids. That said, that was what would bring you in no matter what the issue was. It's for the children. And immediately you go, yes, absolutely. Who could not be for the kids? But when it comes to the parenting of kids, has there been a change in that, Jack? Again, away from the beaver cleaver, you know, mom, puts on a nice sundress to do the housework, and dad comes home from the office at 5:30, and the cocktail is there on the sidebar, and the children are all spiffed up and ready for dinner together, and we discuss the day's activities. And
Tom, I'm laughing, but I'm not sure that ever was a reality. However, I'm never the person who says, let's go back to the old days, because some of the old days were not good days when it came to discrimination and other negative factors. However, there is something that I would just basically call values. And I think it is necessary to point out the statistics that show that if a third of our babies are born out of a committed relationship. It doesn't necessarily have to be a, quote, marriage, although that's kind of the traditional ideal, but a committed relationship. That can be a very, very serious challenge, again, emotionally and economically. We also have to realize that how we relate to each other has changed remarkably over the last two decades that I've noticed. You know, when screens became so prevalent, not only on the wall or on a cabinet, but in our hands, what that has created, I think, is a near addictive personality among our young people. Now, again, you know, I'm not saying let's get all the technology, you know, out in the trash. It's a tool, but it's become a tyrant. And the tyrant, the tyranny, is not being able to not have it in front of them. So if we raise a generation of children who are more interested in screen time than FaceTime, and that's even the name of one of the tools, but in actually face-to-face interaction. You know, again, I'm coming to my fairly new status of grandparenting, and I'm so proud of our son and daughter-in-law because they are limiting severely and positively the amount of time our little Julianne spends with any kind of screen device. Now, why are they doing that? Because the research shows that children need the interaction of human voices, and there's really no interaction from screens. There's movement, there's sounds, but there's no human interaction. There's not emotion, and let alone the violence that can be, you know, displayed in some of these games. So what I would give you is the predicate of, let's look at what was good about the old days, which is people sitting down and eating dinner together without devices in front of them. Let's look at what was good about the old days, that, you know, parents participated in their children's schooling. You know, I'm going to pick on our gender for a minute. I know guys who could literally name 200 football players, college and pro, but can't name one of their kids' teachers. Now, that sounds judgmental, but that to me is a symbol of something called spectatorism. I'd rather know the names of people who I watch on TV or go to the stadium to cheer. Now, nothing against football or sports, but where are guys' heads? And I'm feeling the sense that we need to recognize, I mean, if you're going to watch four games on the weekend, why don't you throw the ball at least one or two times to your own child or some child who needs a big brother, big sister? You know, I think emotionally, and I can kind of plead this, but, you know, I think we need to really put it into practice. I think we really got to see how we use our hours. And if we're using our hours watching somebody else do something, then I think that creates a deficiency that needs some kind of curative agent. And I say, let's put down the devices and get out there and help kids and help elders and do the right thing.
On our perspectives last week, where we talked about suicide, one of the factors that we were able to connect to youth suicide was that disconnection. Even though you are screen connected, you are disconnected from the larger world of actual human beings. And the amount of depression that that seems to be engendering in at least a certain portion of our young people who feel totally cut off from the rest of the world, even though they are plugged in around the clock.
Absolutely. I mean, Tom, you're saying it just right. Connection does not mean communication. Communication has emotion. Communication has a give and take. It has something as elemental as eye contact. I spend a quarter of my time now with each of the four generations. That's how I schedule my visits. So I'm on campuses a lot, and sometimes I'm in foster homes, and sometimes I'm in places where, you know, children congregate, you know, whether it's their choice or not. Just eye contact is minimal. And again, it's a symbol for moving away from some ways that I think many of us grew up and benefited from. Now, you know, again, my story, which, you know, I remind people who know me, I was the child of a 60-year-old man. My dad was 60, older than all of my friends' grandfathers. My father was a blind man. Now, he wasn't blind his whole life. He was blind at age 50-something, which proves that you don't need vision for all of your activities. That's my little joke of the hour. But my work, and I wasn't paid, I got room and board starting at age 8 and 9, was to read for my father. I was his second set of eyes. Now, I think there's a direct line between my pretty good style of writing and my pretty good style of speaking with being able to say to my dad what he needed most was a second set of eyes. Now, why is that relevant? Because I was embarrassed to be the child of an old blind man. I didn't really feel that that was fair because my friends did not have this, quote, burden. But you know what? Now, 40, 50 years later, his blindness and his age were gifts to me because I had to do something that turned out to be my career. In his case, it was one-on-one advocacy. Now, in my case, it's others. A larger classroom, I should say. Now again, the gift of disability is hardly ever discussed. If we have caring responsibility, whether to older folks or to people with special challenges, what lessons are we learning about ourselves? Now, again, if we separate our children from these realities, if aging grandma lives somewhere else and we never see her, if grandpa falls and he can't drive anymore and we don't have a teenager pitching in and using maybe his new driver's license to help grandpa get around, I mean, I think we're just missing opportunities that should be taken. And, you know, I get teary-eyed about this in some ways because I'm meeting a lot of my peers, 60s, 70s, 80s, even 90-year-olds, who really do need connectedness. They don't need isolation. They don't need to be observers of just the TV screen. So we've got to do better. And I think we have the capacity to do better.
Perhaps while not going as all in as some of the Oriental cultures do with ancestor worship and the deification of older folks, which you still see a little bit of, not to the extent that maybe we did in past years, Jack. I noticed that there is still a worshiping of the young in our culture to perhaps a larger degree than even it was 20 years ago, because just look at the sitcoms and some of the other mass media portrayals we see of older folks who, if they can't use the latest app on the phone, they are not just out of it, but they are incredibly stupid.
You know, I'm spending some more time with our Latin or Hispanic friends, doing some work in the Tampa Bay area where the population is very, very mixed. And I'm learning about the power of the abuela, the grandmother who was there, not only cooking the meals, but giving a sense of love and devotion to the grandchildren. Now, some would criticize that it was too protective. But I'm meeting person after person, and when I engage in them, who was the most important person in your life growing up? Usually it's that grandmother. And I feel that too, because, my grandmother used to bring people to her dining room table in the Bronx, feed people Russian food, and you know what? She had an agenda, and that agenda was helping another family. So she was able to fill their bellies, but then also fill their hearts with a sense of giving. And it worked. To this day, I now do guest dinners in people's homes. I've done 64 of them. I'll be offering one on this radio station on the 9th. It's 5 o'clock as part of the fun drive. It's called Good Cause Cuisine. And again, I feel like I'm carrying on that tradition that was not only given to me, but it works. Bringing people around a table and talking about a cause is a great tradition that we need to re-evoke in our families and in our communities.
And leave the devices away from the table, would you please? My wife set down the law on that because, I'm always connected to the radio station. And so my phone's going off around the clock. But she says, when we sit down and eat, just leave that damn phone over there on the table, okay?
And join a Kiwanis club. I'm a Kiwanian. Kiwanis is about children. It's about community. We've got 6 clubs here in the greater Tallahassee area. Mine happens to be Capital City. And, I don't go to all the meetings. I mean, some people have more time to go to meetings than I do, but we do phenomenal things. And what the things we do are research proven, supporting healthy families, supporting the miracle, a field that we help build for children with special needs. And, get out there and meet folks who have common interests. Don't isolate. Just connect and communicate.
I think Dr. Donna has something to add to that here on Perspectives. Hey, Dr. Donna, thanks for calling. How are you today?
I'm fine, Tom. Thank you for the interesting program. And hi, Jack. I've been in private practice for forever. And I've certainly seen the burden of caring for children shift to grandparents who are ill-prepared for it. But I wanted to amplify something you said. I think your previous caller, Reed, would probably knows about this quote because we're both bluegrass musicians, which supports this sense of family, is that John Philip Sousa said he lived during the time before and during when music became stored on devices and you could play it back, and then there was radio, and he railed against it. He wrote newspaper articles. I mean, he went nuts about it, that we're becoming consumers of our culture instead of participants of our culture. And I think John Philip Sousa's comment is still really relevant.
Well, that Donna, you know, moves to that concept that, you know, I'm sharing about spectatorism. Yes, we could be devoted fans of one type of music or one band or one type of theatrical performance, and yet we're not doing it ourselves, and we're not modeling for our children that you too can participate. So I think there's a balance there. We can be fans and also be participants, and I think we need to strike that balance as soon as possible, because, again, if we raise a generation of spectators, then they're not going to pass on the beauty and the satisfaction and the elevation of being participants. So let's get on the task, and I agree with you.
And Dr. Donna, you bring up a very happy memory from my not all that long ago past. One of the happiest and most cohesive families I ever met had the grand tradition of when they finished a meal, they put down the forks and the spoons, they grabbed the mandolins and the fiddles and the guitars, and they went out into the either porch or the patio, and they just started playing up a storm, and that may go on for hours. And well, were they all professional musicians? Nah. And sometimes the music was a little bit off key. Certainly the voices were, but boy, were they a happy family, and everybody did that. That's how they ended mealtime.
So, you know, Tom, I'm with you. Let's do some home cooking. Let's do some home gardening. Let's do some, you know, helping our neighbors with their yard work if they need help. Let's be real neighbors. And then when we're relaxing, let's go ahead and play the music. And it may sound like a, you know, some kind of a crazy dream, but what's stopping us? I think our children need good modeling, and these are excellent, excellent ways to get there.
And remember that the little eyes and ears are always open. We forget that sometimes as grown-ups, don't we, Jack?
Yeah, some great writer said, they occasionally do what we say, but they always do what we do.
Just in the minute that we have left, Jack, tell us more about Four Generations Institute and how people can find out more about that.
Yeah, well, I love hearing from folks really by email. It's a little old-fashioned, but it's jack@4gen.org. I'll reply back. It's me. There's no bureaucracy. We also, Tom, have something that I'm going to announce in early November, which is a four-item checklist that we're asking people to pledge and do, and I'm not going to give you the details right now, but my network will hear about it very, very soon. And, of course, I can't close without the Advocate's Credo. Thou art my child, my parent, my elder. I love thee best, but could not love thee half as much. Love I not all the rest. And that's a measure of the love we have for our own by that which we're willing to do for others. That makes the love for ours whole. If we believe that, then we need to act on that and do it community-wide, statewide, internationally. And I think we'd be in a better place.
Jack Levine, you are definitely a treasure, not just for us here in the Tallahassee area, but statewide and nationally as well, because even internationally, let's face it, all those little screens are connected to a big, wide world out there. But thank you for being the voice of reason and knowledge and love.
Back at you, Tom. Back at you, Tom. We love public broadcasting and need to support it.
And thank you for coming in, helping out with the upcoming fall pledge drive as well, Jack. And it'll be good to hear you back on the radio then. Folks, thank you for tuning in to this edition of Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan, and our special thanks going out to, of course, Taylor Cox pushing all the buttons today and Lydell Rawls. We will tell you about the upcoming show, which is next week. Was North Florida the cradle of the first Americans? Well, members of a research team that's currently rewriting both the anthropology and history books will share their latest discoveries along that line next week on Perspectives. I think you'll find it fascinating, and I can't wait to hear the latest stuff they've come up with on that dig out there in Jefferson County. We'll talk more then. Please be safe as Dorian bears down on the Sunshine State, and we'll talk again next week right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.